What's up, cyber and crypto homies? Today is Monday, December 23rd of 2024. Almost Christmas time. This is episode number 123 of the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I am your host, Eric English. All the views and opinions on this podcast are solely my opinions and do not reflect the opinions of my employer. If you want to follow me on X, I'm at CyberCryptoGuy. Okay, so we got some interesting topics today wanted to dive into. Apparently, there's a pretty big bug that was fixed with Microsoft multi-factor authentication, so we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about some Apache vulnerabilities that just came out as well. We're going to touch on Marriott and what the FTC is forcing them to do since their latest data breach. We're also going to talk about Beyond Trust and some of the issues that they've had recently too with their breach. So lots of topics to dive into. Also, just general IT topics. Wanted to talk about prioritization. I know that's kind of a broad word, but we'll dive deep into that too. And touch on some of that. And then for the crypto side of things, definitely a lot going on there. We're seeing quite the downturn in the market, so we'll talk about that, all the different prices, and where we think it's going to go from here. In addition to that, we'll talk about our good old XRP or Ripple, see how it's chugging along here. Also going to touch briefly on some more fun news with Mr. Donald Trump and the whole crypto world. So lots of things to dive into here. We'll start on the cybersecurity side of things. We'll start with Beyond Trust. This was a pretty big one when it hit. Effectively, they were breached and their remote support SaaS instances were affected by this breach. So if you're not familiar with Beyond Trust, they're a privileged access management company. And that's a massive piece of your organization if you use this product for privileged access management. Privileged access is typically dealing with your passwords and your secrets. So effectively, they suffered this cyber attack in early December, and they breached their SaaS instances, specifically the remote support SaaS platform is what it looks like here. So on December 2nd of this year, they detected anomalous behavior, quote unquote, on its network, and their investigation started from there. They confirmed that the threat actors, my favorite word, compromised some of their remote support SaaS instances. So yeah, that's definitely not good. Effectively, it looks like they also got into their, or this is how they got in, they used the remote support SaaS API key. And that allowed them to reset passwords for local application accounts. So yeah, this one's pretty bad here. And they looks like they cleaned it up on December the 5th and did a root cause analysis. So it was only a few days. However, you know, this is still a massive thing. So remote support is typically used for remoting into various types of systems. And if that is compromised, that means the bad guys may have remoted into some customer systems. So this is definitely not good. And this is all caused by some sort of a leaked API key. And it looks like there was, you know, a small subset of customers that were impacted, maybe not all. It also doesn't specify how many customers were affected by this. And they also say, too, it's also unclear if the threat actors actually compromised any instances for downstream customers. So they got into the platform itself, but they're saying, well, we're not real sure if they got into any customer accounts yet. Well, that's not good. You think they'd have a way to detect that, but if the bad guys cover their tracks good enough, then maybe they don't. But as part of all this, they found a critical vulnerability, and this may have potentially led to some of this, but there is a command injection flaw that impacts the remote support and privileged access, privileged remote access products. And they're basically saying with that one, successful exploitation of that vulnerability can allow an unauthenticated remote attacker to execute underlying operating system commands. So yeah, that's definitely not good either. So that one's the critical one. Then there was a medium severity one as well. So regardless, that's a pretty nasty thing to see your privileged access management solution get breached. And it makes you wonder how many customers of theirs are going to run for the hills after this type of thing. I've always been a big fan of CyberArk, and no, I don't get paid to say that. They take security almost too seriously sometimes, and you'll know this when you try to set up some of their products and you're working with their product teams and their deployment teams. It is very difficult to set all these things up, and if all the right, you know, little bells and whistles and tweaks and registry settings and GPOs aren't set correctly, their products will not work. So it's something they take very, very seriously. So I've always been a fan of them. I've used a little bit of Delinea is what it's now called. I wasn't a huge fan of them. However, it was I would say more simple to deploy, and it didn't seem like they took security as seriously as CyberArk. And Beyond Trust, I used them a long time ago. It's been so long, I don't even remember what it was used for at the time, but I think this was for some of their PS exec commands, if I recall correctly, that I guess they created that way back in the day. But anyway, there's that company has grown, obviously, since that, and become a much, much bigger company and offers a lot more products than they used to. So either way, definitely a scary thing to see, and you just hate to see this kind of thing happen. All right, some other news about our good friends at old Marriott. Yep, well, the FTC decided that, hey, guess what? You guys are going to have to implement a robust customer data security scheme. That's pretty interesting to see that the FTC comes down on a company like Marriott, you know, requesting that they do this. And it's interesting, Starwood Hotels is basically where that whole data breach kind of originated from. It's one of their subsidiaries, I guess you could say. And the FTC is basically saying that they failed to implement reasonable data security. This makes me wonder what is reasonable data security, but either way, it's kind of interesting to see that this is coming from the FTC. Now, Marriott's publicly traded and all those things, so I guess that makes more sense there. But either way, they are requiring them to establish a security program that's going to safeguard their client's sensitive data and provide better control over that data, blah, blah, blah. Some of the key notes here are to not only implement the information security program, but as part of that program, they have to include things like encryption, access control, MFA, vulnerability management, incident response. That's kind of the entire program, right? I don't know what else there would be. Then they're saying they also have to maintain policies to retain personal information only as long as reasonably necessary, logging and monitoring. They're going to have to also conduct independent biannual assessments of the InfoSec program for up to 20 years. Woo-wee, it's a long time. And they're also going to have to provide a method for U.S. customers to review suspected unauthorized activity in their loyalty rewards accounts and restore those points in the case of a breach. And they're also to inform the FTC within 10 days of any required notification to governmental entities about security breaches. Wow, okay, I guess that's what they mean by a reasonable data security program. But so all of this kind of started back in like 2014, I believe it was, where Starwood's payment systems got hacked, which of course exposed customer data, all kinds of fun stuff. And they didn't disclose this for over a year. So that's where they're really getting in trouble here. Then they had another breach that lasted 4 years from 2014 to 2018 with a whopping 339 million compromised guest records that were included as part of that. And in those guest records were unencrypted passport numbers. So, man, shooey, that's a lot. But then they also had more in 2018 where the hackers accessed data of 5.2 million Marriott guests. But this was only detected in 2020. So, yeah, the Marriott folks have had some issues there. If you're looking for a job in cybersecurity, you may want to reach out to Marriott. They need some help from the community here, from the security community to help. You know, it's crazy, too, when you acquire a company, and I've been at businesses that have done acquisitions and all this kind of fun stuff, it is really hard to not only acquire that company, but then to fold them into your security practices.
Assuming you have some.
If you don't have any security practices, well, okay, that's a different story. But, you know, folding another organization in under your current security tools and programs is very challenging and requires a ton of work. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that Marriott's not at fault here. They've had since 2014 to take this stuff seriously, and clearly they haven't taken it seriously enough. But you see this in very large organizations. You can think of orgs like AT&T and other just massive giant Microsoft, who, you know, they're so big they move like a sloth and they acquire companies left and right, and there's little to no security review done of those companies before they acquire them. They just say, oh, you're a competitor, we're going to buy you, sorry. And then, oh yeah, guys, figure out how to integrate all this. So all the IT teams are left scratching their heads going, well, what do we do now? How do we integrate this? And what about all these security problems? And yeah, it just becomes quite the mess. So either way, this is not good for the folks at Marriott, but, you know, good on the FTC for, you know, requiring this kind of security to be implemented, because clearly they haven't taken it seriously enough. And this stems all the way back to 2014, so they've had plenty of time, if you ask me. All right, some other news here about our good friends at Apache. So there's a couple of different Apache vulnerabilities that just came out. Tomcat is one, and then Apache Struts is another. Some of these have remote code execution type vulnerabilities. So, you know, these are typically used on websites, web servers specifically. So if you have Apache Struts or Apache Tomcat on something that's externally facing, you probably want to go and get that patched pretty much right away. These are RCE vulnerabilities here. So remote code execution can be performed. So these are definitely something you need to take extremely seriously and jump into it right away. Which kind of leads me to my other topic of prioritization, and, you know, how do you prioritize your security projects, your risks, all those kinds of things? Because if everything's a priority, then nothing is a priority, right? So this is where you run into issues where organizations, everything's a fire, right? Everything is a fire. No matter what you do, it's a fire drill, everything. Every time you turn around, the boss is dropping another fire drill in your lap, and now that's the priority. And all the other things from yesterday and 2 hours ago are no longer the priority. So this creates not only, you know, chaos basically in your organization, but you're never going to get anywhere because you're chasing your tail. You're chasing the next fire drill and you're not fixing the problem. So some of the things that I think are helpful when trying to prioritize, and this has to come from upper management. Upper management has to understand that not everything is really a fire drill like they say it is. And this is where it gets really tricky for middle managers who are being told by directors and above that this new fire drill is the priority. So some things that you can do to combat that, if you are the middle manager or, you know, on the team from the middle manager who's getting all these new directives out of the blue, you have to be able to talk to that, you know, upper management person. If they're a director, a C-level, whatever, you have to have some sort of communication channel with them, an open and honest communication channel where you can say, hey, look, I understand you think these are priorities. However, this is what we think. And are you sure you really want us to do this? Because right now our plates are full. What would you like us to deprioritize? And you can list out everything that is on your plate and say, hey, here's all those other fire drills that you said are a priority. Which one of those is no longer the priority? Which one do we replace with this latest one you just sent me today? And see if they'll, you know, budge a little bit. And then, you know, I would also just be very clear and say, hey, look, you know, if all these things are a priority, nothing's a priority. And fight back, you know, push back. You have to have a way to score these things if you need to, a risk assessment, give it some sort of numbering, number grade, number, whatever, letter, I don't care. Just give it some sort of a score as far as risk goes. And then you go after the highest risk items, right? And that is your priority, not this new news article that just came out about Apache Tomcat, right? That's great and all, but what about all the other vulnerabilities that you got laying around, right? So it's a big challenge because, you know, upper managers and directors and above may be getting, you know, some sort of directive from their boss, right? So it all trickles down. However, at some point, you know, you have to trust that you hired the right people to do the job and that those people are doing what is best for your organization. And you have to let them actually work. You have to let them do their job and not throw a fire drill at them every 2 seconds. So if you're in that situation, have a talk with your upper management folks and just say, hey, look, you know, this is what we are experiencing, and it is because of all these things that you're throwing over the fence to us that are now a priority. Can we get some sort of a pipeline going where we actually prioritize these things correctly? Or is it always just going to be a fire drill? And just try to get some sort of traction that way, create some sort of a risk register, a JIRA board, however you want to do it, just create some sort of mechanism to risk rate each and every one of these things and then have a prioritization based on that risk rating. Because that's what it's all about. It's about reducing risk. That's what cybersecurity is. So you go after the highest risk items and go from there, right? So yeah, it's difficult though for all sides. And I certainly feel your pain if you're dealing with it from any of these sides. And it's a never-ending battle, it seems like, but you have to be open and honest and have a clear communication channel with those upper management folks. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to be a problem. All right, so let's jump over to the crypto world. And you can see we've taken quite the hit here over the last few days, and this is to be expected. You know, there's going to be pullbacks, there's going to be dips. It's going to happen, right? So Bitcoin got all the way up to 106,000, but now it dipped back down to 92,000. But again, this is part of the cycle, right? We hit these new highest of highs, and then we get a 30% pullback, right? And then it'll go up to another highest of highs and another pullback. So this is, I think, to be expected. And we may see it pull back a little bit further here before the next big, you know, run. But it's hard to say, you know, how much longer this whole bull run is going to last. I think that we're nearing the end of the super cycle, in my opinion, you know, based on historical trends. But I do think there's one more push coming. However, it's just hard to say when and for how long and how far of a push are we going to get. My prediction is that Bitcoin might hit 115 to 120,000. And in doing so, all the altcoins will of course have their rallies and follow a little bit. But, you know, this is yet to be seen, of course. And of course, this is not financial advice. I'm not an expert. I'm not a day trader. I don't do this for day trading. I just look at it and tinker with it for fun. So those are my opinions. So our good old friends at Ethereum are at 33.77 right now. XRP or Ripple is at $2.23. Now Ripple's been interesting because everybody was on the Ripple bandwagon for so long. It's like, oh my God, Ripple's awesome. Everybody's using it. It's going to be the next best thing. And then it wasn't. And then they got all these lawsuits and it just turned into quite the mess. Well, you know, I'm a little surprised it's at $2.23. But, you know, I don't foresee this going too much higher than maybe $3 potentially. It got up to $2.73. I'm sorry, $2.90 was their high. And that's pretty darn good. I think $3 to maybe $3.50 is probably the top for that. They're saying that Ripple has still got another run in it. I think it's going to wait for Bitcoin to run, as it always does, as most others do. However, we have seen instances where Ripple had its own little run without any of the other coins having a run at all. So there's a possibility that it might run, you know, without the others. However, I just don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to go much higher than $3.50. It's just to get to even $3.50, the market cap's going to be huge and there's no way they're going to surpass Bitcoin. So that's our good friends at Ripple or XRP. And again, you know, when these dips happen, by the way, you can still, you know, convert your crypto into USDC. You know, as the dip is starting, convert to USDC. You can earn a little bit of interest on it, 4.35% APY. And then when you think you're at the bottom of that little dip, all right, buy back in again, right? So that you can save your gains a little bit by just kind of dumping it into USDC. And if you miss the run or whatever, I mean, it's going to happen. It happens with all day traders. But if you're on Coinbase and you don't use like Coinbase One or some other trading platform, this is still a pretty simple and effective way to save your gains and, you know, not lose everything in these pullbacks. So just a little bit of trickery there that you can do and still earn a little bit of interest on it too, which is kind of nice. So in other news, our president-elect, Mr. Donald Trump, he named a crypto-friendly Mr. Stephen Moran as chair of Council of Economic Advisors. So this is probably a good thing for the crypto space here if we are, you know, appointing somebody who is, you know, crypto friendly. So, you know, I think this may actually help with the next little bull run that we have with crypto. And I do think that once the holidays have kind of passed, that next little jump is probably going to start. And this is just, you know, it's more fuel for the fire here to see that we're hiring and appointing crypto advocates in the White House there. So anyway, it's just kind of a side note there. I think that this could, like I said, it could help with our next little bull run that we got coming up here, and we'll see what happens. All right, folks, that's all I got for today. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again soon.